Hello and welcome to the Wellington Halton Hills Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. So what is the Wellington Halton Hills Politicast? Well, for the next couple of weeks, it's going to be a mini-series we're doing to profile the people running in the riding of Wellington Halton Hills, which basically surrounds Guelph and has a very unique and different character from our political feel here in the Royal City. So for this first edition of the Wellington Halton Hills Politicast, I talked to Ralph Martin, the Green Party candidate running in this riding. If you know the history of Wellington Halton Hills since its formation in 2004, then you know it's been all about Michael Chong, the conservative incumbent who's widely regarded as something of a maverick and a moderate inside his own party. In 2015, even as the Liberals swept to power throughout eastern Canada and especially in large portions of the GTHA, Chong held on to his Wellington Halton Hills riding with nearly 51% of the vote. You could call it a dynasty, I suppose, but the Guelph Party has its own dynasty in Wellington Halton Hills. For the first time in the last five elections, Brent Boitler is not running as the Green candidate in this riding. Boitler has done a lot to represent the party in Wellington Halton Hills, but his best finish was in 2008 when he made it to third place with nearly 10% of the vote. In 2015, he fell just short of 4% of the vote, which might have suggested to local Green supporters that it might have been time for some new blood. That new blood came in the form of Ralph Martin. Martin grew up on a beef and hog farm in Wallenstein, which is in Wellington County, before he then left home and worked his way through academia to earn a PhD in plant science at McGill. In 2001, he founded Organic Agricultural Center of Canada to coordinate the university research and education pertaining to organic systems across Canada. And then from 2011 to 2016, he was the Loblaw Chair of Sustainable Food Protection at the University of Guelph, where he is still a professor and a researcher. Martin's hope, like the hopes of many running for the Green Party, is that this election is going to be a breakthrough for the Greens and that the klaxon of concern over climate change is going to propel the election of several new Green Party MPs that will hold the balance of power in a minority government and then force real climate action in the House of Commons. It's a big dream, but is it doable? And is it doable in a riding where the sitting Conservative MP has actually been recognized for his own commitment to the environment? So this week on the Wellington Halton Hills Politicast, that's one of the questions we'll put to Martin and how he thinks he will fare against an incumbent that's already been endorsed by at least one environmental advocacy group. Martin also talks about covering the vast amount of territory that makes up Wellington Halton Hills while doing so in an environmentally friendly way and how this area can hope to tackle real climate action without any real public transit in the area. We also talk about the top priorities for the people of Wellington Halton Hills, how food policy plays into discussions on climate change, and what the House of Commons might look like with the Greens holding the balance of power. So I caught up with Ralph Martin earlier this week at his campaign office. So Ralph Martin, thank you for joining me today.
Happy to.
I wanted to first address, because I'm from Georgetown originally.
Okay, good.
So this is my home riding. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it as particularly, I guess, a groundswell of potential environmental action. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that primarily concerned me about living there, being someone who doesn't want to drive, is lack of transit.
Yes.
So how do you, as a Green candidate, and you're not just covering the Halton Hills area, but a big wide swath of a riding, how do you responsibly, in keeping with the Green traditions of keeping your personal carbon footprint and your emissions down, how do you cope with covering such a vast distance on a campaign?
Well, for many years, I did not own a car. I just rented one when I needed one. For this campaign, I do need something that goes a bit more quickly than a bicycle, and that is reliable in the evenings and so on when it's dark and wet and raining and that type of thing. I do now own a small car. I bought a Micra. Its gas mileage is about the same as a hybrid, and especially when I'm going distances on the highway, and it wasn't very expensive. And I'm not sure what I'll do after the election. going to Ottawa would mean that I'd have to figure out how to get back and forth to Ottawa. I think I'd do that by train. Mm-hmm. And then in the riding, I'll need a vehicle sometimes when I'm here. Maybe I'll rent again. I'm not sure. The problem with renting is that when you ask for the smallest vehicle possible, they sometimes give you a pickup truck. And I'm trying, you know, I want them to give me the smallest, and I really mean that. And when they give me an upgrade, that's not an asset to me. That's a problem.
You're the one guy that says no upgrade.
Right, right. Downgrade, please.
Downgrade.
Yeah.
I did note that the Halton Hills Council passed a resolution about climate change.
Exactly.
Can they circle that square, given you can't travel around Halton Hills unless you have a car?
Well, I think they're looking at all options into the future. Like, they want to get to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. Mm-hmm. That's an extremely ambitious target, and I'm really pleased with the fact that they've set this goal. They are looking at all options. They're planning to review it every year. They're looking at building retrofits. They want all the vehicles in Halton Hills to be electric. There are now more GO trains going from Georgetown to, well, from Acton and Georgetown to Toronto every day, so that will help somewhat to keep cars off the 401 and off the other main roads around there. But within Halton Hills, I think there's certainly a need for public transit, and it seems to me that would jive very well with their goal to get to net zero by 2030. So that I'm hoping that at some point they will look at ways to do that, and whatever support I could provide from the federal level, I would want to do that.
So it sounds like this riding you hope to represent is sort of maybe where the country is at, too, because for the first time, climate change and environment cracked the top three in terms of election priorities.
Correct.
And it seems like maybe my old perceptions of my hometown are out of date, because they're one of the ones who have caught up with this idea.
Well, certainly in terms of addressing climate change, and there are some councillors on Halton Hills Council who are very well informed, and they have a lot of knowledge about what needs to be done and how to address this. I think awareness is rapidly evolving, not only in Georgetown and Acton, but right across the riding, across the country, for that matter. In Elora, Fergus, Aberfoyle, the issue is access to clean water and making sure that it's not all pumped away, and treating water as a public trust. That is one of the major issues there.
Water is sort of the great equalizer in terms of the environmental discussion. Nobody's against more water authority.
No, the thing is, though, that the legal structures that we have in place now make it possible for companies like Nestle's to still pump out a lot of water. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to make sure that we have the regulations in place such that no more water is pumped than what we can afford from our aquifers. And the first priority is to keep clean water available for residents in the riding for now and well into the future. And we have to make sure that we're not pumping too much, and that we're not disturbing aquifers by doing that pumping.
So is, you know, this change in the governance of Halton Hills and, you know, other areas of the riding, is that reflected at the doors, that when you're door knocking, is that a priority, climate change?
For some people, for others it's not. Interestingly, I'm finding grandparents to be most concerned about climate change. It seems that a lot of parents are too, but they're so busy in their daily lives that maybe they don't have quite as much time to reflect. Grandparents are telling me that they're very concerned about climate change. They're very concerned about the future their grandchildren are going to experience, and they want to do what they can to mitigate the damage.
I just wanted to note that one of your competitors in this race, the incumbent, Michael Chong, he has been actually endorsed by Green PAC, which is an environmental advocacy group, as you know. that tries to endorse, environmentally friendly candidates.
Mm-hmm.
It must, does it sting a little that the conservatives?
Well, yeah, I mean, over the years, I've been, I've applied for many grants and awards, and some of them are granted and some are not.
Mm.
And I'm not quite sure what the criteria were in this case.
Mm.
My political experience is limited, so is that if that is what they were looking
sure.
at, perhaps that's how they made the decision. But I have no lack of confidence about my my credibility as an environmentalist,
right.
based on my research and based on my activities with civil society and local groups.
It does present something, and I'm sure you've probably thought of this, of an uphill climb, because you're already battling the incumbency of Michael Chong, who I think this is his fifth election.
Mm-hmm.
He's already, you know, people who don't think well of the conservatives do tend to think well of Michael Chong. And then so it is kind of this third strike. So it seems like you're kind of in a unique battle here.
I suppose so. but the thing is that Michael Chong, for all his skills and his principles, is still choosing to stay within the Conservative Party.
Right.
And I know he's taken some stands that were against the Conservative Party. He's been disciplined for those stands. Those were rather dramatic and exceptional circumstances. But in the Green Party, it would not be dramatic nor exceptional
right.
for someone to just simply represent their riding. In fact, according to the Green Party Constitution, we're expected to represent our ridings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a case where we've campaigned on something like climate change, we will all vote together because we want to keep our promises. But for issues that we have not campaigned on, it's expected that we will consult with our riding and represent our ridings first. Elizabeth May will consult with her riding, and if they ask her to vote a certain way on an issue, she will.
Mm.
And if my riding asks me to vote the opposite way on that issue, I will. And there will be no drama, and there will be no unusual circumstances associated with that. That's just the way we do business as usual, as normal.
It poses an interesting philosophical question, though. What if the riding is wrong?
Yeah, I don't know how often that would come up. It may. Yes, and so that comes down to my own values and principles as an individual. And I think that if there was a case where my own values and principles were at stake, I would go with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in almost all cases, at this point, I don't foresee how a majority of people in the riding would conflict with what I see as important and wanting to do.
You come up in the riding, there's a reasonable expectation you're representing their values.
I think so,
yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Wellington County. I know how people think, and I think I would represent what they want.
I want to get into your background a bit. You are an academic professionally.
Yes.
But your area of speciality is plant science, I want to say.
Yes.
Am I oversimplifying?
Well, yeah, my PhD is in plant science. Most of my academic experience is with cropping systems,
mm-hmm.
Specifically forage crops. Mm-hmm. Forages are the crops that sheep and beef and dairy cattle eat.
Mm-hmm.
But forage crops are also good for conserving soil and for building up soil organic matter. So I have an area of specialty in forage crops and grazing systems. I also have an area of specialty in organic agriculture and then in sustainable agriculture. I've done some work with soil health and improving soil health. So those are all areas I've worked on.
Because it strikes me that food protection of the food chain and protection of our agricultural resources is another one of these sort of environmental areas where
right.
there's widespread agreement, where you know, people will vote to protect those resources, even if they are, let's be generous and say, climate change skeptics.
Well, I think so. I mean, everybody realizes that we're going to need food both today and into the future. And class 1, 2, 3 land is limited in Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a large expanse of farmland, but the good farmland, class 1, 2, and 3, it is very important to us, and it's really important to protect it, not only to protect it from development, but to protect it from degradation. And that means farming in such a way that we at least maintain or improve the soil health. And in order to do that, I think it's appropriate for the federal government to have incentives mm-hmm. to encourage farmers to do that. And part of that would benefit society as a whole, not only by the increased food production capacity, but also by the fact that we're sequestering carbon, taking it out of the air where we don't want it, and putting it into the soil where we do want it.
Right. So how is the Canadian government on egg policy now? And you're looking at it from the point of view as someone who's maybe an intermediary, because you're in the research field, so you're
right.
You know, you're working with farmers, you're also working with government, so you're sort of in a unique position to sort of give the report card of how we're doing on our egg policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to soil health, we have challenges. Like 82% of the farmland in Ontario is now losing soil organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably less than 25 to 20% of our farmland that is covered by cover crops during the non-growing seasons. It should be 100%. So yes, we have some significant challenges there, and we need the appropriate incentives in place to make sure that farmers do that. And I think it is worthwhile paying farmers to grow soil, if you will. Right now we're paying them to grow products,
mm-hmm.
but if we incentivize them to build their soil health and to draw down carbon from the air and build soil organic matter, that is investing in agricultural resilience for the future.
So would that be like taking a season off just to build a...
No, it just means you don't necessarily have to take a season off. It just means that you have to make sure the soil is covered all the time, that there are cover crops there to prevent erosion,
okay.
that those cover crops are bringing carbon out of the air and putting them into the soil, the roots are improving the soil. It just means that you want to have the soil covered all the time.
Mm.
And you want to be sure that... the soil is not exposed, that there's not too much compaction. You want to minimize tillage, preferably no-till.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all things that we can do. You want to add organic amendments, whether it's manure or digestate from anaerobic digesters, compost. All of these things need to be added to the soil, and farmers in general know what needs to be done. There are any range of things they could do. There's a range of best practices they could do. But I think if we incentivize them by measuring the carbon that is in the soil, and we could do that every 5 years in every field, I think farmers would respond.
So where does government come in?
I think government comes in by providing the incentives, by providing the money for the incentives.
Okay. Let's get back to the issues. We've covered the environment a lot, but I mean, what are the other priorities that you're hearing about in Wellington, Halton Hills?
Well, there are quite a few people who are in situations of precarious housing.
Mm.
As I understand it, in Wellington County, the job situation is actually pretty good. Most people mm. are employed. There's not that much employment, but quite a few of them are employed at a salary level that does not allow them to get the kind of housing that they really want or need,
right.
and there isn't adequate housing available. So in the Green Party, we do have an affordable housing plan in place. We would build or plan to fund the building of 25,000 new homes per year across the country and 15,000 retrofitted homes.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, we have a retrofit program for all buildings to create jobs, to reduce heating and cooling costs, and then, of course, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
And this is a weird situation where I would imagine whoever wins the Guelph riding and whoever wins the Wellington-Halton Hills riding have to work together, because Wellington County administers social housing.
Right.
And that includes the social housing in Guelph as well.
Correct, yeah.
So have you thought in that regard about how not only representing your riding, which includes Wellington County, but also having to mm-hmm. create those connections to Guelph and whoever represents Guelph, and it could be someone of a different party too.
Of course, yeah. And by all means. I think my experience with organic agriculture tells me that in the 1990s, when I was applying for the funding, mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that told me in non-organic or conventional agriculture that was not a good idea, and they were opposed to it. And I heard the criticisms, and then when I got the funding, I included them because some of them had skills that I required to move the organic agriculture agenda ahead. And I expect that I'll be dealing with people in different jurisdictions, municipal, provincial, federal, as well as in different parties, and that's just the way the world works, and I'm happy to negotiate and work with anyone.
What else is a priority in Wellington-Halton Hills?
I would say that quite a few people are telling me they're tired of bickering. Like when they look at politics, they see a lot of bickering. And in Canada, we have a history of having had only two parties that have formed a government at the federal level, the Conservative and the Liberals. And I think it's time that we move beyond that and to include other actors in the political process in such a way that we can be actively engaged. So when people realize there's a possibility of a minority government, and the polls are suggesting it'll be a minority Conservative or minority Liberal government, and that the Green Party might hold the balance of power, there's quite a bit of enthusiasm for that because it means that there will be a new, practical, responsible party holding whoever forms government, holding their feet to the fire, and asking them to make sure that they get the right work done. And we talk to people about the fact that we expect to work across party lines and work with different people. And in Parliament, we do not heckle. And a lot of people, when they talk about politics, talk about the bickering, especially between the two big parties, and they're tired of it.
Having said that, this seems to be the bickering election.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we as in the Green Party have to do that, and we're trying to make sure that we're available with the best ideas to move them ahead.
Right, and I guess what that gets to me, though, is that you have, let's say four or five kids in the room, and two of them are sort of getting the most attention. And I think teachers will tell you this, too, that sometimes you get so focused on the problem kids, you're not paying attention to the other kids who will sit there quietly, open their workbook, and get their work done, and you don't really maybe give them the attention they need, too.
But as a teacher or a professor, it's often the quieter students that write the best essays. They're the ones that do the research, and they're the ones that really come through. And I think in the Green Party, like in particularly in this campaign, in this riding, we have been quietly going door to door since the beginning of July. I've been canvassing 6 days a week since the beginning of July. I've met a lot of people at doors. I've had a lot of conversations. And we don't have a lot of money to waste or to spend or to throw around on lots of media and so on. It's just these quiet conversations we're having throughout the riding. And we're building awareness and confidence, and I feel quite encouraged by what people are telling me.
Well, you brought it up, balance of power.
Yes.
And I think that, there's a lot of hopes in your party that there will be a certain amount of influence that can be exerted. So what does the Green Party having the balance of power look like in practical terms? How would that look? How would that work in Parliament, do you think?
Well, I think that it means that we would set a priority for addressing climate change. That is the big issue that's facing us right now. And any government that would expect our support would have to seriously address this. And mm-hmm. right now, our targets are 60% reductions of greenhouse gases by 2030 and net zero by 2050. The Liberals and Conservatives currently have targets of 30%. They each do. That simply isn't enough. It's less than what the IPCC is recommending. And in fact, in Canada right now, our greenhouse gases are still going up. They're not coming down. And with the exception of 2009, just after the recession or when the recession took hold, we've been above 700 megatons every year since the beginning of the 2000s. So I think that addressing this and seriously looking at it is what we would want to do in Parliament, and we would hold whatever political partner it is to those criteria.
Going back to what you said, though, one of the likely political partners is a party that, if they admit there's a problem, won't maybe address or won't look at the really radical solutions that are being proposed, some of them by the Green Party. And in fact, one of the, and I think a lot of people in the Green Party would say this, and maybe even yourself, the one really big solution that the Liberals have brought forward, the carbon tax, you know, there's a movement to just throw that out the window, which is...
Well, I think I think it's a trend within the Conservative Party right now. It was a conservative, Preston Manning, who is one of the first politicians to suggest a price in carbon that is revenue neutral.
I make that point all the time.
And he's been promoting that for a long time. And I think a well-implemented price in carbon that is revenue neutral is something, it sends a market signal. It's a basic conservative idea in many ways. The conservatives were the ones in power when we negotiated the Montreal Protocol regarding ozone. So I think that there are some populist governments right now with Jason Kenney and Doug Ford in Alberta and Ontario. I'm not sure that they would necessarily carry the day if it came to the point that the conservatives would hold power or lose it in Ottawa. I think that would focus the thinking, and I think that there's a possibility that they would look at practical solutions. It's a very practical solution, a price on carbon that is revenue neutral, and that doesn't say that there aren't other things we couldn't do as well. I think we have to stop subsidies to fossil fuel companies and that type of thing. And I've lived long enough to see that ideas can change fairly quickly once it becomes obvious that the way forward is a little bit different than what you had previously thought.
Maybe the fact that Andrew Scheer won't say that climate change is a Chinese hoax is a weirdly positive sign. if we're putting the best face on it.
Right.
But I feel like, you know, I was at the climate strike in Guelph on Friday. And
I was at the one in Georgetown then, yes.
Yeah. There were a lot of events going on. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like there's cause to be hopeful. But I feel like there's cause to be pessimistic, too.
Absolutely. As a scientist, I'm struggling with that all the time. And there are days of despair. Like when I look at the data and when I look at some of the scientific papers, and I realize that many of the projections of the IPCC were actually underestimates, like we've gone further than what they predicted, and the chances are that the situation will be worse in 2030, 2040, and 2050 than what they're now predicting, that is cause to be despairing, and there is a possibility that we've already gone too far, and that we will not be able to pull out of this. But that being the case, I think it's really important to do whatever we can, as long as we have some leverage and some mm-hmm. ability to respond and to mitigate and to adapt. I think it compels us as decent human beings to do that, and therein lies the hope. But we don't know for sure if we're going to make it or not. And I think regardless of the outcome, I want to go out trying to do everything I can.
Well, that was kind of depressing. I want to get back to the naked politics of it. What do you think makes or breaks this campaign for you? What do you think makes just enough people sort of go, you know what, 4 or 5 terms of, you know, Michael Chong is enough. I'm going to roll the dice and see what Ralph can do.
Mm-hmm.
What? How does that turn?
Well, I think in this riding, a lot of people are telling me at the doors that they have buyer's remorse about a certain Ford they bought.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want another Ford lookalike in Ottawa while they have a Ford in Toronto. They're coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
There are Liberals who are unhappy with the Liberal Party, and they reneged on proportional representation. They bought a pipeline. Mm-hmm. They're still running deficits.
Mm-hmm.
They're not happy, and they're coming my way. The Liberal voters are not inclined to vote Conservative. Neither are the Conservative voters inclined to vote Liberal. They're both comfortable with coming to Green. And one of our mottos is not left, not right, but forward.
Mm-hmm.
And as we do march forward, we're attracting a lot of former Liberals, a lot of former Conservatives. And I think it's important to be practical and not to promise too much.
Mm-hmm.
And climate change does require all hands on deck. And yet, if we do start making practical moves in time, I think there's a lot that we can still do, and a lot of people appreciate the common sense of that. By waiting too long or by dithering, we're not going to be able to do it. So in this riding, the way that I will win is to have enough former Conservatives come my way and enough former Liberals, some of the NDP will as well, and to see that the Green offers some practical solutions for ecological and social and financial resilience.
Is apathy a concern?
This is really interesting because there are quite a few voters I talk to at the door who tell me that they don't vote. They're so disgusted with politics that they no longer vote.
Mm.
And I tell them they're exactly the kind of person I want to talk to because this time, there are so many people from both the Conservative side and the Liberal side that are coming my way that they can be part of this and they can vote for something instead of objecting by not voting at all. And their vote could be the one that puts me over the top. And and I've had a number of conversations with people who usually don't vote who are planning to vote for me this time.
Mm. How about you personally? What makes Ralph Martin someone who's worthy to represent Wellington Halton Hills?
I think the fact that I was born in this area, I grew up here in Wellington County. I'm a practical farm boy. I'm a scientist. I don't see myself as hard to get along with. I work with people regardless of their background and regardless of their party affiliation. I think that in agriculture, I've shown that I can work with a lot of people to move ahead. And politically, I'm sure I can do the same.
Local boy makes good.
That's the way I see it, yeah.
Ralph Martin, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And once again, that was Ralph Martin. To find out more about Martin and his campaign, you can visit his website at ralphmartingreenparty.ca. And stay tuned for more insights from the candidates in Wellington, Halton Hills, in future editions of this series. And that is it for this edition of the Wellington, Halton Hills Politicast. The music for Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Siddale. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Or you can download it from the host Podbean at GuelphPoliticast.podbean.com. Also, when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or Guelph Politico. There is a Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you on Wednesday. And until then, see you next time.